Listen, I posed a little question.
We're not walking down memory lane, you two, are we? It's a very, very long lane.
Listen. Not again. I didn't know this. I didn't discover this until today when I was just on Wikipedia and I was looking at one player.
Was it the Fountain of Youth, David?
Yeah, I don't know. I was looking at one player and this, singing this song, right? I don't think anybody's going to get this, right? But singing this song is a City player, right? And I'm just going to play it out. I know Ian hates the music, but here we go. Look, anybody who knows who this is, well done you. I'm looking at this on YouTube and it's had 7,100 views. And it was put up 4 years ago. And I'll give clues during the... Neil and I were going to be sharing. Here we go. See if you know who this bit of music is. Here we go. All right, who's this? They come in different sizes. Some are big, some are small. Is it Junior Pent?
No.
There we go.
I know J. Emmanuel Thomas was into music.
Not him. Any ideas, Ian?
Lee Trundle?
What are you asking? Are you asking me who it was?
If you know who it was, yeah.
No, I'm glad.
Any
I
ideas?
No, well, I'm glad I don't, to be honest.
Well, I'll tell you what.
David, is it Petula Clark, who was our centre back in the 1950s?
It's not Petula Clark, no. No. But it's somebody, Ian. I always remember it was at a sporting dinner, and it was a few years ago. It was more than 10. Hang on, I'm gonna narrow it down a bit. More than 10 and less than 20. And this bloke was sat on our table, and you went up and said, yeah. And he was never the same player after that. That's what Mel said anyway.
Liam Fontaine.
see, absolutely right. That is Liam Fontaine, who's still playing for Edinburgh at the age of 38.
Div 3 up in Scotland.
Up in Scotland. Yeah. And he recorded. I just found this by chance on Wikipedia today.
So, David, how badly did you ruin his career? And if you apologise,
it was Ian. No, Ian, it obviously stuck in Ian's mind. Because you said he was shit, Ian, didn't you? He was sat there with his wife.
Dave, I didn't say that. And I'm not like that. What I said to him, if you remember, he was having a real bad time. And I said to him, why do you think you've lost for him? And he said...
That's a euphemism for being shit.
A.K.A.
He was out the side, he'd lost for him, and was getting criticised by the manager. And I said... How come you? I was having a chat to him about other things before, and I said, "Well, why?" He said, "Well, I've lost form." And I said, "Well, why do you reckon you've lost form then? Because you were always a decent player, I thought." He said, "I don't know." He said, "I don't know. I can't put my finger on it, but I don't know."
Anyway,
after that was it.
Anyway, so once again, look, this is Liam Fontaine.
I think he was his career was ruined by scoring that goal at Wolves, and Gary Johnson said he was going to bear his backside in Burton's window.
Yeah.
I don't think he was ever thinking of Gary Johnson's backside, and he was probably just up for the crack. That would have devastated many a man, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to leave this bit in, actually, because not the bit where I use the four-letter word, all right, which Ian was that, is absolutely right.
Or am I, so how many tracks do you have by Liam Fontaine and the
I've
Fontaine
just got the
Blitz?
One. Here we go. Look, listen, but I think it's quite good, considering. There we go, which brings us in nicely to the fact that welcome to Forever Bristol City podcast. We're recording this on a Sunday afternoon. I'm looking forward to having my cup of tea and a piece of Victoria sponge when I get home.
Can I just say something?
Giggling. You're acting like a four-year-old.
I know.
Just let him get on with it.
Wow. It's just what you said about Ian and his sporting dinner. I still can't stop laughing.
I know. No, look. All right. No, let's have a proper start.
I'm sorry.
Let's just have a proper start now. Right, so... 10 seconds silence. from now. Well, here we go. Welcome to another episode of Forever Bristol City Podcast. We're recording it at Sunday tea time, and joining me this afternoon are Ian, Mark, and sat next to me in Forever Bristol City Podcast studio is Neil. I don't know why we're feeling, or I'm sounding relatively upbeat, because final score at the Liberty Stadium, although it's not called that anymore, it finished Swansea 2 City nil, so repeat scoreline of what Cardiff did us by a few weeks ago. I'll come to each of you in turn. Literally just 30-second summation of the game. You first, Ian.
My summation of the game, the only positive, well, two positives that I can see from that game. Number one was Taylor Clark's performance. I thought he did well on debut. And I would have said he was our man of the match. Low bar, I know, but I think he was. And the fact that we're still effectively 13 points clear of relegation. But I can't really see any other positives from that. And I saw a lot of negatives. So okay. That's my two penalty.
All right. Mark, what did you think? You're always able to pluck out some good from the less good.
Yeah, installing me thunder. And I mean, we saw a glimpse of the future. Omar Taylor-Clark, a very Corey Smith-type player, bless him, won lots of tackles, played good short passes, link in play, track back excellently, tired a bit at the end. You know, 19 years old, I think, you know, he is definitely one that's going to feature for years to come for Bristol City, hopefully. The other positive was probably Kane Wilson coming on, who looked like he has plenty of energy running down the right side. But really, I think we knew once that Matty James had got injured, we were really going to be limping along. There's nobody to link the play. We haven't got a Fours who's able to hold the ball up. And the play was very sloppy all round. We tried to force the tempo at times. And against a side who gave you a lot of room and were quite wasteful. Although Swansea had loads of possession, they were so wasteful, which is why they're where they are. They don't score a lot of goals. We were poor on the day, and it was a fair result.
Neil, fair result or?
Well, I haven't seen the comments of Nigel Pearson yet, because I've been racing back from Portishead, where I've been with the mother-in-law, bless, for Mother and Sunday. But for me, it was a question of a team running out of steam a little bit, really. You've got a lot of young people out there, a lot of people actually first real season at this level. You play sort of 12 games and a dozen games or so, you get by on raw energy and raw nerves, but the physical demands and the mental demands of playing in a championship, the last few games, people have been jaded, haven't they, Dave?
Yeah.
No. At the end of the day, and there's jaded performances out there and players are playing out of position a little bit. Tanner can't get past half time at the moment. No. He seems to be the default change at half time, playing Pring in the centre. You know, we are where we are, to use a lovely Pearson phrase, in terms of the players we have available to us. The break has probably come at the right time.
Yeah.
We've got a couple of weeks now. If we can get Conway, Naismith, Pearson back on the pitch, I think that will make a huge difference in terms of just a little bit more experience, ability to actually put our foot on the ball, and as Ian and Mark have said, that the link-up play. But for me, last season was all about WSM. Yeah, we did an end of season, didn't we, with Chris Honor, when we spoke about it. And it wasn't just the goals, it was the assists from them.
They scored 50 and they created 29 of them themselves.
Yeah, they were 60% of the assists were from the three players as well as the goals. And the lack of creativity in the team is still acute, isn't it?
Well, the lack of creativity, which starts to point a finger, not point a finger, but it says a lot that we've got a 20 million player in our midst, right? Who, for me, I think should be offering more. But more of that later. Let's get into the action. We'll look at the teams. Before I say that, I mean, Swansea, right? They'd gone into this. Bear in mind, we played them three times already this season. and what was it? It was a cup, was one of it was a draw and two wins basically, right? But Swansea went into this with three wins in 21 league games, right? They were fourth back in the autumn. They won all five of their games in September, so they were where we were. First win in seven, this was, And Russell Martin, their manager, who plays possession football. I mean, at one stage, the first 22 minutes of the game, I looked at the possession stats. It was 79-21. By the end of the game, it had slotted round, I think, to a more respectable 58-42, which shows that when we did get the ball, clearly we didn't do much with it. Ian, the team sort of picks itself, but there were three changes. But what do you think of the players that dropped out? And Omer Taylor-Clark, he deserved being selected, didn't he?
Yeah, Taylor-Clark did. I think it was, as Neil alluded to, it was a game too far for Andy King. It was a game too far for quite a few of them. Sam Bell's not a left winger. Harry Cornick's certainly not a number nine. I've got no idea what he is. And I was really disappointed to see him in the starting lineup. He hasn't done anything. I mean, basically, for me, if you're doing it, you're in. If you're not doing it, you're out. And I think players are put up with that. And if I was one of our strikers and he was in the team in front of me, I'd be knocking on his door.
Yeah.
So let's get that out of the way. And having that said, I don't think we're strong enough to leave Mometi. Wyman's not had a great season, but he's got to be a better shout, even as a 10 or even as a false 9. To Harry Cornick, Naki Wells can consider himself unlucky. Although, in fairness, he's not been brilliant lately either.
We've got
the seven players out injured. At least three of those, if not four, will be missing for the rest of the season. So, I looked at the lineup and I didn't expect much, and I didn't get much, did I?
Okay, Mark, looking at the lineup. Or was it Zach? Zach Viner was made captain. I mean, I think that's a just reward for his performances this season. And maybe the shape of things to come. Do you see him as being a future captain material?
Oh, don't see why not. I think he's had an outstanding season. But what it comes down to on the end of the day is, you know, command the respect of players, somebody who can players up, you know, takes responsibility, shows for everything which he's doing this season. You know, doesn't go missing at all and gets the best out of players. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? In this country, we take the captain on the pitch, captain, very seriously, that they don't do in Europe. They tend to have lots of, you know, on field leaders where we traditionally look at it one person. It doesn't really look like that, but I'm fine with Zach doing that job.
Neil, looking at the opposition and our bench, I mean, let's look at the opposition first. Pato was on the bench, but a start for Liam Walsh, who was signed in that dreadful transfer window which brought Luke Dionne in the club. I looked at his career. He's 25 now. I think he's played a grand total of 74 games in his whole career. He's been at Swansea. This was only his fourth game of the season. Mm. He didn't do too bad, did he? He was one of their better players until he got taken off. Or he didn't look out of place, did he?
He didn't. And there is some quality to him, obviously. But when we let him go, there was the big debate over, you know, oh, let's keep him on. Potential. But his injury record, I think at least half of those appearances, Dave, will be with Coventry in League One.
So, absolutely right.
I think in terms of championship experience, I there is quality with him. There's quality with Jamie Patterson, on his day and in that LJ team. But the consistency wasn't there. And the decision to release both of them was the right decision.
And on the bench for us today, it was interesting that Duncan Idahan got a slot and Wood was brought back. So we had a full bench.
Rather than a six like in midweek.
Well, yeah. It was a touch of the Steve Cottrells there, wasn't it? Because he could have put a bum on a seat. But, you know, Idahan, when he did play at the very end of last season, they were cameo appearances. I think
he was
maybe
good
it was
at
one start.
He
you saw the game, you went to that game. But you looked at him and it's gone terribly wrong for him, and we don't know why. It was something amongst the squad, I think, or the players. But, you know, it would be great if he was given a start now, between now and the end of the season and maybe push Pring out to his rightful position. Yeah, do you think he's worth that?
What I think we need to, review. I mean, this break's come at the best time, isn't it?
Yeah.
In all honesty,
at
the moment reminds me a little bit of the going back to the old semi-finals. You know, the cup games when we were playing so well in the league, and we had the Man United and the Man City, and we had that Man City game a few weeks ago, didn't we?
Mm.
And we were playing well, and we went into it. Yeah, we had Atkinson had just got injured, hadn't he? And stuff, but we were playing well. The energy of that game, I think, kind of sucked a little bit out of us.
Mm.
And then I think, obviously, Mehmeti and Cornet didn't play because they were cup tied. But you can't. Then you went back to the league afterwards, and we just haven't quite got the same energy levels.
Well, we've only won one of the last five in the league. That's what it is.
Now. So
which is
gone, after that. And I mean, if you look at the games we've played, we played Blackpool, Huddersfield, Swansea, you know. There are games there that we could have got results. When you look at the results that we got against the teams that we got prior to that cup game, afterwards, not scoring against Huddersfield, huffing and puffing against Blackpool until potentially the goal of the season by Vyman, you know, put us in a better position because they were never going to score.
No.
And then, what is it, two goals from open play in seven or eight now?
Yeah,
Mark will correct me if I'm wrong there, Mark, but is it seven or eight?
It's about that.
Right, let's dig into the action. Zach got, he'd been given the captain's armband. It almost screwed up in the first 90 seconds, and then they showed that they have this patient build-up. But we had a good spell of play where we had Scott a free kick after Cornick had been fouled, and then Sykes again, a poor cross. Dead ball situations, Ian, I'm getting to the point now, dead ball situations and crossing, it ain't good, is it? And that was a classic situation there. Two free kicks we had and some corners and a poor cross by Sykes. Why can't we make them telling? What's, you know, you'd think they'd get this happening on the training ground, wouldn't you?
Well, you would. But they've been bad all season. The number of times, I mean, Scott's free kick wasn't just bad. I mean, he's hit the foot of the first defender. He hasn't even got it into the penalty, already got into the penalty area. He's hit the guy's leg. I don't think the guy could believe his luck that it was such a poor free kick. The best free kick of the game was the one that Mehmeti put in. And Vyman headed in the net, but that was offside. We couldn't see if it was offside or not because you need to be looking along the line, and some of the camera angles today were shocking. But, our set pieces have been poor all season. Now, they are trying to do something different with them. Sykes put in a good ball in the later stages of the first half after a short corner. So they're trying to work something from them because they realised that with absolutely no height in the side, there's no point in scuffing a corner in or chipping it into the middle of the box of the back post. But our set pieces have been poor all season. Naismith is probably the best deliverer of a set piece, but he's inconsistent when he does it as well. So that's something that over the season, we've got a lot better on defending set pieces, but we've got arguably worse or certainly no better at attacking set pieces. And the number of times, Sykes had another go when he crossed the ball, and the commentator said, well, you know, good cross. It was 2 foot over Sam Bell's head.
Yeah.
That's a good cross.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. I just, you know, you don't like to see it. I mean, you've got all week, learn how to cross the bloody thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Mark, they showed how you can cross because it was a deep cross. Their first real chance of note, this is the home side, 28 minutes, a deep cross, and there was Matt Grimes, his header saved by Max, instinctive save by Max. Max has been getting a few bits of criticism on the forum with his kicking and overall play. And then Walsh was there with a follow-up, which Pring did well to block that. But it just shows, you know, when you have height in the team, that you can cause problems from crosses. And just to pick up, Mark, from what Ian said as well, talked about Sykes crosses. There was a period where we had three corners. Two were taken by Scott, one by Jay De Silva. No real threat at all, was there? But that chance when Max, that was the best thing Max did all day, was that save, wasn't it?
Yeah, because he was near post. I mean, the thing is, when you're playing Jay De Silva, he was going to get out-jumped. We will come to those three, four, five occasions where they got a big man up against him and, either headed it across goal or headed it on goal, and it was good save at base of the right-hand post by Max. But we were just getting the ball played through as easily, and Matt Grimes and Liam Walsh, you know, had acres of space to play into.
Mm. So do you think, Mark, that, you know, Grimes and Walsh look good because, you know, Scott was trying to fight a lone battle in midfield and King's legs were gone? You know, I just saw, I mean, he looked like he'd lost about a stone in weight. He looked a pale shadow. He didn't look on it, but we surrendered the midfield, didn't we? And whilst I was slightly critical of Scott saying one would expect more, if he's there by himself and you've got two pretty good championship player, well, no, you got one very good championship player and somebody who had a point to prove. But, you know, it was, well, we surrendered it, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, the crazy thing was Swansea were so cavalier at playing it out from the back. You know they're going to get caught by, you know, like some Millwall and other teams, because they'll just nick it on the edge of their area. The way they played the play through our press, we have like so many chances sometimes to nick the ball. And run it back. You've got to commend them on their bravery, although it could be mass stupidity. But we just let them carry the ball into the midfield area with Grimes and Walsh. There's always winning runners. Ryan Manning on the left has so much space. We didn't offer.
Well, he showed what a wing back should do, really, didn't he? Because he was right up there.
Yeah, but our full backs were very tentative. When they got good passes in those advanced positions, they kill the ball rather than pushing it on, and the move would be dead.
Yeah.
It's looking to come back inside, defender adjusts, facing up against that player, and then the pass goes backwards and you recycle and do it all over again.
Okay, I'll come to you first, Neil, for the first goal on 33 minutes. Walsh, Natcham, clever control, and then good pass to Cullen. But, you know, we were a bit statuesque defending that, weren't we? Yeah.
I like Oliver Natcham. He's a good player, isn't he? I mean, that equaliser he had down the gate, great strike earlier on in the season. He's a forceful presence out there. I think the criticism, I've looked back at the goal. My initial viewing of it was Max was down a bit slowly and the ball goes underneath him, doesn't
Commentator said that as well, actually.
Did he?
Yeah, or it might have been Chris picked him up, said
I thought he was down a bit slowly, a bit slow to react. Mm. The ball went underneath him.
Yeah,
and there was a save there, and Max hasn't been great the last. There's been some savable efforts, but I think he falls into the group of players that I spoke about at the start. That you're number one, you're in the team, it's week in, week out, you're there every game. And this is his first season, really, at this level where he is number one, playing week in, week out. It'll be interesting, Hyken. You know, we've brought him in. He's on the bench.
Well,
but if ever there's an indication he's not going to be here next season, it's probably at the moment, because Max looks like somebody who's at his own high levels isn't quite at it at the moment.
All right. Okay. Ian, how did you see the first goal? You know, a clever goal, avoidable goal. They're all avoidable to some extent, but unless they're like Andy Vyman's, of course, a couple of weeks ago.
It was an avoidable goal. I mean, it came from, once again, not retaining the ball in our own final third. We lose the ball. I think Walsh plays the long diagonal to Natcham. If he did that deliberately, fair play to him. The ball struck him in the back and dropped down. Sykes is running back towards him, but doesn't stop him from doing anything. He plays a little slip ball down the side to Cullen, and Zach Viner was probably a foot away from blocking the shot. It didn't have a great deal of power. He didn't hit it that hard. It went across O'Leary. It seemed to go under his hand. So I thought that was, all in all, apart from that one super save in the first half when Jay De Silva, I thought, got mercilessly exposed by... I mean, if you were playing Bristol City, you'd say, right, we've got a big tall nine in Pirro. Get him to drift wide on crosses, because neither of the two fullbacks are great in the air. And Jay De Silva, whilst he's as game as they make him, He's 5 foot six. And you get a guy 6 foot two jumping against you, you ain't going to win the header.
No.
So that's exactly what, you know, if you were an opposition manager, that's exactly what you tell your nine to do. And I don't think Swansea used that tactic enough today, because the second goal came from Jay being out-jumped across from Pato. So
right. Let's come back onto that one in a minute. I thought
Max could have done much better with the first goal. But all in all, our team play leading up to it and our defending wasn't great.
Yeah. Mark, do you think when I say about Scott being, you know, not looking this £20 million player, with a striker like Semenyo, when he's banging the goals in, you know, you could say, he had two spells in his time at City, did Semenyo, where the goals came and he looked the player he was, a £10 million player. But the only glimpse of Scott being the now England under 20 player Scott, because he'd been selected for the squad in the current gap, was just before the break when I think it was the ball was half cleared and he did a double step and burst into the box and just put in a useful cross. But should we be expecting more from Scott, in your opinion?
I think he's got to improve his shooting. Because he does get himself into good areas. He reminds me a bit like James Maddison. You can carry the ball. You can certainly dribble, and he can open up. I mean, the difference is Maddison can finish. He can shoot. I think the other thing, and I think it's frustrating for Scott, won his best game today, is you need better movement ahead of you to be able to play players in, and that's the problem. There just isn't good movement ahead of him sometimes. So he's carrying the ball a long way, and Anis Bometi does this as well. Keeps hold of the ball very well. Scott wins a lot of free kicks because he can keep possession so well that he needs, but he's taking too long on the ball. He really wants somebody with him who can run alongside him or pull the defender away to open the play up. Our movement off the ball is poor. I remember watching the game last week, I think on Sky, the highlights, where we had, I think, somebody on the right and we had four players in a row in the box. You need a couple of players who are dropping off so the defenders have got to think about whether the ball's going back or along the line. We just make it easy for teams to defend against us. So in Scott's defence, I think that's good, but he needs to improve his shooting or find a bit of space. But I can't really blame him. I think it's just the situation we're in. I mean, I said the other week, it's going to be a bumpy ride, and with all the injuries, it's proven to be true.
Absolutely. Well, we seem to have more than our fair share. Neil, into the second half, and they're renowned for their build-up play, but they had a good chance where, Route 1, as the commentator said, it Fisher and found Pirro, who's been a thorn in our side a few times, but that was a good effort for them right at the start of the second period, wasn't it? Yeah.
Pirro is a quality player at this level.
Mm.
And when you're running, you know, they're probably still knocked off that we beat them in a cup at their place after extra time. They probably needed no motivation. And looking at our results going into it, looking at the team that we've got out, if you were Russell Martin, it wouldn't have taken much to wind them up today, I think. They were at us today, weren't they?
Well, they certainly didn't play like it was end of season.
They were at us.
And it didn't look like a team that hadn't won in seven. But then again, you know, Ian said about the lack of height at the back, same player and the same combination, Nacham, probably pronounced that wrong, 54 minutes, Nacham, Manning cross. There was a cross right to the far post. And Pirro was there. Jay De Silva, he's sort of using him as a step up without fouling him. Wanted to hit
like
the post.
It's like the Djukovic's of the Birmingham way, isn't it? Just chuck it up at a back post against us, and you know that we've got a 5 foot nothing fullback at the back post, isn't it? I mean, we've always had a problem, haven't we, on the diagonals? Yeah. Jay, you know, in both fullback areas, Tanner, fair play to him, new contract, richly deserved.
On the basis of it, today, so was that tactical or?
But he is running on empty at the moment, I would say. He looks like he's running on empty. He's there because we haven't really got any sort of other options at the moment.
Other than Kane Wilson, but then he's not a right back.
He's not a right back because you bought him as a right wing back. I mean, in the week, I'm sure we'll get to it, the view on the end of the season, but Ian and I had some dialogue on social media. And I said, you know, are we looking at another right back? If we're going to be playing four at the back, I think we need
experience.
Yeah, you need a better right back option. If you playing Sykes there isn't really, and obviously Scott, you're looking at Tanner. If Tanner can't get past half a game, are you going to get a whole season out of Tanner?
Probably why are we giving him another contract then? If there's stamina problems,
because but you look at Pring, and Pring had the same stamina issues and all the rest of it. Yeah. And sometimes with players, you just got to stay with them. They're new to this level. He's playing 20 odd games this season, and that it's not going to be a huge amount committed to giving Tanner a new contract, and you develop him. And I think it's. Yeah. I don't have a problem with getting Tanner a new contract there.
Okay. And just to finish with you, Neil, on this point, or second half action, the one free kick, we did have another free kick in a good position, and Pring showed that he's got the height to get on the end of those because he scored with his head against Rotherham earlier in the season.
Great
and
cross
this one,
by Scott.
And this was, this was a header cross goal, but again, nobody capitalising on that.
Yeah, I mean... we've missed Pring at left back a little bit, haven't we? Those runs forward and those crosses at the bylines and all the rest of it, and Sykes coming in. You know, we had a bit of a golden period for a few games, didn't we, before we, you know, teams wisened up to it and double-teamed up on Pring. Yeah. We miss him at left back.
We do, because I don't, I mean, well...
But then I think having Mometi in front of him is probably, you know, he's less likely to want to go on his 30, 40-yard runs and go around the back if he's not sure exactly what Mometi's doing behind him, and he knows that he's going to be criticised for leaving that if no one's going to cover him at left back.
Yeah, Ian, we already had Tanner going off at half-time, Vyman coming on. Was that an antic or a tactic, Ian, to use your phrase? Yeah?
I mean, Tanner had a cold and he was on the bench against Luton when he was ill. And then we were told that Wilson wasn't fit or he wasn't getting fit as quickly as he'd like to. And he was on the bench against Luton as well. So Tanner came back in today. So if he wasn't fit, he shouldn't start. But let's just say it's not the first time we've made that substitution. And I can't ever remember seeing it work.
Yeah. And Ian, just to say there, you know, if you got Tanner on the bench, Tanner... Yeah, we knew we were only going to get 45 minutes out of him. Then the sensible move would have been, surely at half time, because it ended up looking like that, would have been to bring Kane Wilson on and just play him in that right back role, even though he's not a conventional right back. Yeah, do you think that would have been a more logical substitution? Because it ended up like that anyway, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, but the side was completely reshuffled. And I mean, Mark Sykes played three positions today, Andy Vyman played three positions. So Mometi started off on the left wing, which is where he plays and he can be effective. He is a bit of a one-trick pony. He's continually cutting in on his right foot. He needs to go the other way a lot more. But what you've got to remember, I mean, you criticised Scott earlier on, which is fair enough, but he is in a really poor team.
And we've said that when he's got good players around him, he shines. So it'll be interesting to see.
Let me finish the point. I don't think you've got much option at the moment. I mean, Zach Bell is a right back from the under-21s, but when they played the cup game the other day, Kane Wilson played right back.
Yeah.
So what you could have done is not played him right back in that game, but played him right back against Luton, because I don't think we could have done much worse. But this shifting Sykes back and forward, Sykes is a right-sided wide midfielder. That's what he is. So you either play him there or don't bother. Sam Bell is a striker, right? Play him there or don't bother. If you want an out-and-out left winger to cover Mometi, recall War Edwards, who I think is up at Raith Rovers, isn't he? Been up there all season. Bring him back if you want a left winger or a right winger, or you want cover in those positions. So it's a little bit like saying, "Well, we haven't got any centre halves." Well, there's two on the bench today.
Yeah, and no, they could have. Yeah, no.
Against Reading, I'd start Iden and get Pring back at left back.
Yeah,
we know Jay's going to be gone the end of the season.
Yeah, and he's not.
We shouldn't get relegated from where we are, right? So it's time to start playing some attacking football. and get Naismith back in the side if he's fit. Get Conway back in the side if they're fit. Well, yeah, you can't play him if they ain't fit. If you get Naismith in the side, if he can do 45, right, and James can do 45, then play him 45 minutes each in the same position.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. All right, we'll look forward to remaining games, and obviously we've got the luxury of having a week off. Ian, Mark, Mometi came on. It was almost a debut goal for Omar Taylor Clark, because Mometi showed what he can do, and he unselfishly laid that ball back. And I thought Omar Taylor Clark hit it well, didn't he? And it didn't bring a spectacular save from the keeper, but it would have been nice if that one had gone on. Yeah, gone in.
Yeah, Mometi was on the left hand side. Brought it in again on his right foot. I think, you know, he's got to vary his runs, and sometimes you just got to push on down the line, take the defender with you, take him out of the game. But yeah, he played it back to the edge of the area, and Taylor Clark came through, hit it not too powerfully. It didn't swing, but yeah, he hit it well. But the keeper made a comfortable save down by his right hand near post. But yeah, I mean, he was great today with some of his break-up tackling, wasn't he, all over the pitch. When Swansea counter-attacked in the first half, he hauled down Ryan Manning and didn't get booked, which marks him out as a star.
He didn't get booked for that. Yeah, and I think the commentator, it might have been Chris Honor, said that he was quite good at anticipating passes, which is how he managed to cut out a few balls. I'll stick with
he could hang a leg back and block. You block tackles, yeah, positional plays, everything there. And I think, you know, for a player who was only 19 in November,
he is a little bit like Torrey Smith in terms of his physique.
His only loan away for competitive football away from the under 23 has been for Yate Town last season. Yeah. So it's been meteoric.
It's a bit of a step up. All right, sticking with you, Mark, and I'll come to each of you on this. I guess for me, the turning point of the game was on the 65th minute when the ball gets played in and Cabango, it looked ball of hand, but I've looked at it two or three times now, and his hand is, you know, at right angles to his body, and he's got his hand in a fist form. Yeah, is that a penalty? In your view, Mark?
Well, the ball came down to Vyman. He wanted to hit it, but he was waiting for the ball to drop, so he hits it into like the hook. He got his elbow bent and he hits it into the hook of his hand and body. But the angles there, I mean, like for the goal, they were absolutely awful. You really wanted to see, you wanted to see it from in front of the goal, front on, like you do at some grounds. You just couldn't tell. I mean, VAR might have been given. But I mean that we're really clutching at straws, aren't we? Where we're looking, that was our only chance to get a goal. But there you go.
Okay, let me ask the same question, Neil. Is that a penalty?
There is an absolute nightmare confusion over handballs nowadays, isn't there? I mean, for me, if the hands are down and they're in what they call a natural position, and it's ball to hand, you know, the arm is extended. And it hits the hand, then you're like, fine, you know, ball to hand. His hands are up.
Mm.
And then the ball to hand, but the hand is in an unnatural position and the ball is, and your hand is up.
Strong appeals as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, does anybody know? Does the refs know?
I don't think they do.
If you look at the goal against Hull, the penalty we had for that, I think his hand's in the same position, but then the ball's travelled a lot more. So it's close like that. You'd be disappointed if it was given against you, but I don't understand the handball rule.
No, all right, well, Ian.
In relation to it, I mean,
don't worry, neither do I. Don't referees do either, do they?
No, I don't.
The thing is, I think it was because he was so close to him. He's saying he can't get it's ball to hand because he couldn't get out of the way. The difference with the Mometi cross in Hull was that it travelled two or three yards before Cyrus Christie had his hands up, and he was moved away from his body, but he had his hands raised, so that gave the referee a decision to make. But I don't think it gave him a
natural stay with Cabango. Yeah. It's an unnatural advantage, though, isn't it? If you have your hands up like that, then you are creating a barrier of sorts, aren't you? So then, okay, if it is ball to hand, but your hand is in an unnatural position, i.e. it's raised, and then it's not given, then what are you going to do next time? You're going to do exactly the same. And then if the ref gives a penalty that the next time that happens, I think we'll be seeing penalties given for exactly the same offence as for the reason they weren't, it wasn't given today.
But is it a case of having VAR at the championship?
Well, you know, just an analogy. Anybody ever see, you see hockey, don't you? If a ball strikes a player in the circle on the feet, the defending team, they get a penalty corner, don't they? On the edge of the D, which is, you know, a very attacking position. But you can deliberately strike the ball at a player's feet to win it. Do you see what I mean? It's just, just playing for it, or is it an accident? Ian,
let me ask your take on it. Is it a penalty in your book, or if it is, it'd be very harsh? What do you think?
I didn't think so. I think Vyman miscontrolled the ball and then lobbed it at the bloke. So I didn't think it was a penalty. And if it was given against us, I'd say it was harsh.
Yeah. And the referee today, fourth time he's refereed us this season, I thought he was fairly okay, didn't you think?
I thought so. I mean, you know, with referees, I like to see them keep their cards in their pocket, and he largely did. Sykes, another referee might have sent Sykes off for when he lashed out with his foot.
Yes, he did, yeah.
After he'd been tripped up. Now,
because that was quite nasty. When you looked at that, he absolutely knew what he was doing there, because he caught him high on the knee, didn't he, when he was on the... he was on the flip. And Beckham got sent off for something not too dissimilar back in the 98 World Cup, didn't he, if you remember?
Yeah, he did. And it's a silly thing to do. I can understand. It's really annoying. You're running away and you get tripped up. But, I mean, we do it. It's what they call it, a professional foul. But, no, I didn't think it was a penalty. And the only time I thought we might get back in the game today was when we were a goal down and we were pressing a little bit. But let's be honest. Their keeper didn't have to do anything out of his skin for 90 minutes, did he?
No.
Oh, we only had one shot in the second half, Ian, recorded, didn't we? That was it.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I think we had three in the game. I can remember the one Scott chipped at him for goalkeeping practice, and the Omar Taylor Clark hit the ball well enough, but it was straight at him. I can't remember the other effort. But...
We had five shots on goal and two on target, according to the BBC stats, and it was 6-3 at the end. Yeah. So.
Oh, there you go. All right. Well, look, let me stick with you, Mark. Again, the game is in its final quarter. And Nacham, he had a good long-range shot. That was a save by Max. But as I say, sticking with you, Mark, the first goal, Nacham to Pato cross, Whittaker header, ball ends up at Nacham, slots it in from just on the edge of the box, if I recall correctly. I mean... Yeah, that was we'd have been proud of scoring that goal, wouldn't we? Because it was, you know, four players involved, and that was it. Yeah. Game over.
And it's a big, strong player like that, you know, who's comfortable shooting with both feet. Omar Taylor Clark had tried to get back into position, but I think he was incredibly tired by then. He tried to block, but the ball went through his legs.
Yeah,
and I think that may have unsighted Max a little bit, because it was more towards the middle of the goal, but the power beat him. But yeah, it was a great finish by. I think it might be Uncham. I mean, he started his career at Manchester City, so you know,
and he was selling brain well there for a period, if I recall correctly. Yeah, they said.
Where, sorry?
Previously played for Celtic as well, I think.
Yeah, I think that's where they got him from. But yeah, I mean, what the amazing thing is about Swansea is how comfortable they look in possession, but how wasteful they are. And really, they could have won the game by more than 2-0, the way that they passed the ball and the way they moved off the ball.
Yeah.
But they are just so.
Well, I think Loud Lisa said on the text. Loud Lisa said on the text earlier on, we made Swansea. You know, a Swansea side that, as we said earlier, you know, this was they'd gone into this with six games without a win, but we let.
Well, they play football the right way, and if they finish some of their attacks, they. All right, I know it's if what and when, but they play great football, no question about that. And I think the most annoying thing for their fans is you're being entertained watching them, but it's that wastefulness in front of goal. If they correct that, I think next season they could.
So
be a lot
Russell
stronger.
Martin, a good manager in your opinion, then, because he's had his critics of late.
Well, that's because they've only won. They haven't won any. They haven't won a game in six. Five defeats and one draw. You know, on a side who were in the Premier League about four seasons ago, played good football under Steve Cooper. Mm. They got to the semi final and the final of the playoffs in consecutive seasons. But they, I mean, Cooper left because there was no money there, so they are rebuilding, but they never compromise on the way that they play.
They've played like that, I would say, for about 15 years, you know, and they always have managers.
Look at the coaches they've had. Roberto Martinez, Brendan Rodgers, you know, Steve Cooper. I think Graham Potter was there.
There was a French guy in there as well.
Graham Potter was there for about 10 minutes as well.
All good managers that have all gone on to better things.
They've had outstanding managers, and they don't compromise the way that they play. I know. It doesn't always work, but they trade well, and they'll be a force, hopefully, you know, with the players we got coming through, and hopefully, you know, if we do some good recruitment, fingers crossed in the summer, that'll be us in a better position next season. We are where we are.
Neil, say game over on the 77th minute, you know, with that second goal, and you know, avoidable in your view or not really?
We just looked tired, Dave. By that stage, we just looked tired. So, you know, it was coming, wasn't it?
And then in injury time, Mometi put in a cross. Weimann was there with a header. That was ruled out for offside. No doubts about that decision.
It looked offside to me, but again, as Ian alluded to, the angles weren't the best, were they? And mind you, I mean, looking at the Portsmouth first goal yesterday, you know, who knows what's offside and what's not nowadays with Colby's first goal for Portsmouth.
No, well, they ran out. Look, I mean, fair play to Swansea. They ran out, I would say worthy winners, but, you know, we were well beaten today. Ian, this Matt Grimes who played for them, he's an ex-Exeter City player. Is he somebody that slipped through our net, bearing in mind that we had something similar happen with Ollie Watkins, wasn't it? Yeah?
Yeah, it was at the time when we were looking in France and Germany and everywhere else apart from what was right under our noses. And it's been happening for years. I mean, Guy Whittingham was another one. He got bought out of the army for 300 quid and went on to become a bit of a legend at Pompey. Ollie Watkins is one. And the lad Grimes is another. I, you know, this is why I say I hope our recruitment under Brian Tinian vastly improves from where it's been. Listening to Nigel Pearson after the game, we've got a long way to go. This is Nigel Pearson not talking, me. Nigel Pearson talking, not me. We've got a long way to go to get where we need to be, knocking on the door of playoffs. Thanks to the fans, 1,300 at Swansea today in what I thought was quite a disappointing crowd for a local derby,
16,713. Yeah.
So the fans have been brilliant all season, but we really haven't given them enough. I've got to agree with him there. And we've stopped scoring goals in open play. Now, I don't disagree with a word of that.
Sorry to interrupt you. You say that every week, which is good that you are. You always say, you know, you agree with what Pearson has to say. So if you're agreeing with him, then that means he's being honest, really, doesn't it? He's not shilly-shallying like a certain other manager is over the other side of the city. It's never his fault. I mean, Pearson says it as it is, yes? And that's...
Well, I think the only way we differ, to be honest, because I quite like Pearson as a bloke, but where we differ is in his solutions to the problem. So as an example, I would have gone four at the back a bit earlier than he did. And I think he was, to use a modern word, kind of forced into it. They love saying that on when they're interviewing people, don't they? Could you kind of sort of, you know, very good job I know because you never tell me. But his solutions. And I'd also, a few games ago, and I did suggest this, if you look back on my Twitter feed, go with two up top, and the formation would be a 4-1-3-2. So I think because all of our strikers, need to play in a two. We haven't got a one for a 4-2-3-1. We just haven't. So you either go and get one, and I please God we do in the summer, but well, I wouldn't put my house on it. So what I'm saying is I disagree with the solutions and some of the tactics, but I think his assessment after games
is sound.
It's sound. It's quite accurate. Yeah, he's not one of these managers that comes out and sees a completely different game, blames the referee all the time, although he's been doing it a bit more lately. But I think the penalty controversy we've gone through this season has led to some of that. But I really hope that he does. I mean, there's, you know, people on Twitter again calling for him to go and saying his record's terrible. And
well, it's probably one person, Mark Carter.
Yeah, it's not. It's a long.
Is it others now? Is it?
It's a long way from one person, Dave. If you go back to the interview he did after Luton and the one he did it on Boxing Day, there was probably 150 people on there having a pop. So it's not just Mark Carter, and I know Mark tweets the same stuff out. But like I said to somebody the other day, rather than criticise him and call him all sorts, argue with him on whether he's factually correct or not, because Nigel Pearson will tell you himself that his record isn't what he wants it to be.
Yeah,
his win rate, he's the third longest serving manager, and his win rate's below the other two longest serving guys in Rowett and Mark Robbins. Yeah. So it's not there. Now, all right, there's always excuses, the injuries and the money, and we've been cost-cutting. I'm hoping that next season, particularly if we sell Scotty, that all those excuses go away.
Well, this is it. No, absolutely, Ian, you're absolutely right there, because, you know, we've cleared the decks of the high wage earners and what have you. This is a very critical summer that's coming up. Mark, let me ask you a question.
Yeah, go for it.
Grimes, you know, impressive player. They haven't got any money, Swansea. If Scott goes, right, and we've got money to spend and they haven't got any money, is he the... I checked him out on his age and what have you. He's 27 in the summer. Yeah. Is that a player that you could see us going for if we, say, got 20 million for Scott? We're not going to be just buying also Rans, because, you know, is he the same sort of player? I'm showing my lack of knowledge. They might be vastly different players, but he certainly seemed to be bossing the midfield today.
Yeah, and he can certainly pass the ball, and you think he'd have some suitors at that age, but probably in the higher echelons of the Championship rather than the Premier League. Otherwise, you know, he'd have gone by now, because remember they got to the playoff final and the semi-finals, you know, three years ago.
That's 3 years ago, mind. That's not,
yeah, Steve Cooper.
I think he's been with them since 2015. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah,
he certainly
wouldn't be a replacement for Scotty. I think, you know, you could look at somebody like Jason Knight, maybe, who's about 23 years old.
So younger.
He plays for Derby County. I think there's another player, Coughlin or somebody at Oxford United, who might be good, and more likely to look at a league below for younger gems, or, you know, look at the likes of the European leagues, maybe. I mean, look at Coventry. They got Gustavo Hamer cheaply, didn't they, from the Eredivisie a couple of seasons ago for a million. So I think City are more likely to shop downwards in the EFL, or maybe
so taking a chance again. Then, Mark, I mean, Neil, with players like that, you know, I think it was somebody, Tom, who works with me, who was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. He said that the sort, you know, we keep modelling ourselves against Brentford and seeing today Brighton have got to the FA Cup semi-final, convincing win against Grimsby. But if you're going to do something in the league, and Tom said, Mometi is the sort of player that Brentford would have signed back in the day. I mean, they're onto bigger and better things now. But if we're going to get money for Scott, right, substantial money, and bearing in mind that we got the money for Semenya as well, you know, going out and buying an experienced Championship player, because surely, you know, somebody like him, he's not going to be on more wages at Swansea than what he's going to be on here. Yeah. And if they've got no money, right? And we are financially better placed than most other clubs in the Championship who don't have parachute payments. We should be going after somebody like him or looking at one or two of the Millwall players, because again, they get half the crowds that we get.
Yeah.
If we go out and buy, okay, we weren't, Jed Wallace was the one last season, one who went to West Brom, you know, and they're obviously always going to beat us on wages. But, you know, this progress, it, you know, baby step, and all the people that said, oh, if we finish the 14th or 15th this season, that'll be an achievement. Well, actually, that's what it's going to be. So what do we need to get to 10th to 6th next year, which would be progress?
10th to 6th, that relies on us finishing 10th, is it? Or from 10th to 6th. Right. Another player this season, Zwemme at Millwall.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic season, bought from the Dutch leagues as well. But again, about 2 million. Colton Morris at Luton, bought from Barnsley, I believe, about 2 million.
And they have money because they'd sold a couple of players and made some decent money. Yeah, with those.
There are players out there, but it is all down to recruitment at the end of the day. And the Championship is a horrible league, isn't it? It's an absolute horrible league because of parachute payments.
Mm.
Parachute payments have corrupted the league to such a degree that any teams coming down or any teams in with the parachute payments warp the league in terms of the wages offered. And that unfortunately, now if you're talking about Millwall, someone like Jake Cooper, at Millwall, centre-back, be fantastic. He's going to have offers. Now, that said, we got Naismith last year, and I don't think anybody thought until Naismith actually signed that he would have better offers, being that he's
30.
Yeah, but being in the you know, Championship team of the season and all the rest of it, you'd think, okay, one of the top teams will do. I think if you're a decent player in the Championship, those however many, 6, 7, 8 clubs, is it?
Mm.
I don't know, 6, 7, say, clubs that are in receipt of parachute payments at the moment are always at an advantage to offer in terms of wages and to just stock their sides, even if you're not playing. Another player I really like, Bakuna at Birmingham, Junior Bakuna. Be fantastic for us.
Mm.
Absolutely fantastic for us. Are we able to get him, or would he go to someone like a West Brom or a Sheffield United if they don't get up, or a Watford or something daft like that?
Because they're able to offer
30 grand
eight.
A week.
I'm looking at the top eight as it stands now, and you're right. Mm. There's four clubs have got parachute payments.
Yeah. Right.
But four haven't. Coventry, Millwall, Blackburn, Luton, and Middlesbrough. None of those have got parachute payments.
Yeah, yeah.
So five out of the top eight, yeah. So we've got to be what when we go into the transfer market this summer, you know, we've got to be buying players that would that would enable us to do a Coventry, Millwall, Blackburn, Luton, or Middlesbrough.
Well, I think that the issue this season is that we've blooded a hell of a lot of academy players, and they've all shown some real talent coming forward from the academy, but that takes time.
Mm.
You know, so what do you do? Do you go out in the summer, Dave, and buy 5, 6, 7 players, and then that stunts the momentum of the academy? I mean, if it wasn't for the academy, God knows where we'd be.
All right, but do you
at the moment? But I mean, if you look, I don't know, going back to that 90s Alan Hansen, you don't win anything with kids scenario. I mean, what it's proved is that unless you have a sensational talent, and Alex Scott, if Naismith was playing alongside Alex Scott, if we had a midfield three at the moment, Naismith, Pearson and Scott would be released to be playing a very different role than what he's doing.
Midfield three.
You're saying Pearson. Do you mean James?
James, I do apologise. You're quite right, Ian. I meant James. Yeah.
Well,
so
James,
sorry.
Naismith and
James,
Scott.
James, Naismith and Scott.
I still think that lacks mobility.
Yeah, but Naismith frees up Scott.
Yeah, but
Scott is having to come deep. Scott's having to do an awful lot of work at the moment because, quite frankly, our midfield isn't up to it.
All right.
But, I mean, it's a real dilemma. If you were Tinian there, and Tinian is in advanced role at the moment, and you're like, okay, we've got this money, from Semenya, which has really helped plug any potential gaps. And we spent a little bit on Mometi and a little bit on Cornet bringing forward. We've got some scope and the budgets, hopefully, but we're still going to lose a hell of a lot of money because our operating costs are so climbing high as an organisation that we're always going to lose money regardless. And then you've got Scott money potentially coming in. So what do you do? Do you throw caution to the wind and then go out and buy six or seven players? But that's what we kind of did with LJ, didn't it?
And then
the academy players, the academy players that we now see, that we're now, you know, waxing lyrical about, don't get the same opportunities. But
with our injury record, though, instead of going out and buying six or seven, which has always been the policy, we bought quantity, not quality. And with the youngsters now who've been blooded this season, rather than go out and buy six or seven, let's go out and buy three or four really good ones that we know that if they get injured, they suffer the curse of the hamstring probability.
You know, I'm conscious of the fact that, you know, Ian and Mark or whatever talk about that, about this as well. But I mean,
Ian, you know what? Neil was just saying, yeah, if we're going to go out and buy six or seven, it's going to stunt the growth. Well, of the youngsters.
There's a balance to be struck.
Surely we're better off going and buying three or four really good ones, knowing that if they get injured, they suffer the curse of Bristol City. Then we've got some youngsters that are able deputies coming through now because of the pain that we've had this season. You know, we've blooded them. Yeah. What do you say in that respect? Quantity, not quality, or quality, not quantity.
Right, you finished?
Yep.
Right, we need two players for every position, plus six. So we need to take the squad to 28. At the moment, the squad's 23. Now, in that 23-man squad, I'm counting Eamon Benaroos, I'm counting Alex Scott, and I'm counting Tommy Conway, and I'm counting Sam Bell. All kids. So... I'm not counting Omar Taylor-Clark yet because he's only made his debut and played one game. But once he's played five or six games or something like that, then he goes in the first team squad as well. So you need 28 players because at any one time, we've always got four to six injured. We just have. And that's an improvement from the first season when Pearson came in, the Dean Holden, Nigel Pearson season, when at one point we had 21 players out injured.
Yeah,
nine or ten with hamstrings, and all the injuries we seem to get are long term. You've only got to look. Williams got another long termer. He's out of contract next year, and you've got to seriously look at. Do you retain him? Because I think when he plays, he's value. He's a decent player, but is he going to play enough games? Naismith has had two serious calf injuries this year. You missed a lot more games if we hadn't had the World Cup break. So it's important that we have that size of squad, because then when you get a couple of centre-backs get injured, you're not right. Moving Cam Pring to centre-back and shifting Jay De Silva in at left-back. I mean, Jay would be gone in the summer anyway. Thomas Callas probably will go to take a pay cut. So at the end of the day, that's the size of squad we need. Right. Now, we need players who are good enough to play in the Championship, either week in, week out, that if you want to call that your first 11, first 18. And we need sometimes younger players, not always, that you can dip in and out for a couple of games. And that's how I see playing it. But you're right. Yeah, I'd rather sign four good quality players than eight that aren't any better than the ones we got. Okay. Because that's where we went with Lee Johnson.
Yeah. Let me just ask Mark that question. Then I want to wrap up with talking about the run into the season after the international break. Eight games left, and I'm predicting 8 points in that. And I'll tell you where that would see us finish as well. Mark, Ian said we need to have, you know, two players for each position plus five, first team squad of 28. I wonder how that size compares with a Luton or a Millwall, yeah? Because I don't think they've got any resources like that yet. Here they still are, challenging at the top of the division. What do you think, Mark?
Well, I think, you need fit players. And I think, with the injuries we keep sustaining, you lose key players. At key times, it sends you backwards. Or, we were lucky with the run of fixtures that we had that we didn't get less points, really, because we were playing the likes of Blackpool and Wigan and Huddersfield. When we had, we had key players missing. That's the problem. I think we suffer a lot of injuries, which obviously affects you. I think, perhaps there's a lack of confidence in the way that we play sometimes on the ball. We're not brave enough when we're going forward. Other teams have got perhaps a lot more comfortable in their own style of play. You could see that the way that Luton did that the other night, and they got players to suit their style of play. Big men up front who can hold the ball up from those long crossfield passes, and we're playing a formation with a 4-2-3-1 with somebody who's getting bullied off the ball all the game. It's effectively like you're having a target man. So that it's not working. So they're playing a style, and they got the players to adapt to those. That's why Luton are doing well. They're in that second season cycle where they got. They traded well, and look at Millwall are up there as well. It's like the same thing. Millwall spent a little bit of money on that Dutch guy. I think somebody corrected me about that. They probably have got a little bit more money than us, but I think it's injuries. The number of injuries that we have every season, key players missing for months on end. Thomas Callas. And then Callas returning.
Well, the list goes on.
ACL, Williams, yeah. Really. I mean, he looked quite good, but then he's done his hamstring and he's out for the rest of the season. You just cannot expect a team to be consistent with that amount of injuries, David. That's the big problem. Perhaps you need... I think the players have struggled sometimes when they come in because they have come from a lower level, and that's the chance that you take. With the Tanners and the Kane Wilsons, that they're not able to adapt to the rigors of the Championship as quickly as they like when they get injured.
Here's one for Neil. He's just brought this to my attention, and I'll ask Ian as well before we do quickly. I'm conscious you've got to get away relatively shortly, Mark. But players out of contract in a year, in other words, summer of 2024, Neil, you've just listed William, James and Weidman. I'm guessing that's with a view to do we want to offer
them? Do we offer new contracts?
Do we offer
Weidman in the summer? Do you offer a new contract to Weidman in the summer? There's a question for you, Dave. Would you? After the season he's had? Well, looks like he's lost the yard of pace.
So is he out of contract in the
summer? He's out of contract.
Is this summer?
No, 2024. So they're entering the last year of their contract. So this year, using that analogy of entering that last year, if you're going to get any value out of these players, if there's any value left in Williams, I think Matty James will get a new contract, but Weidman, King. Do you give King another contract? Do you keep him going for another year? He's out of contract at the end of the season as well. The point that Ian made was really valid about, the squad depth, but there was a lot of decisions to be made about the existing players that are here, let alone, bringing new players into
the squad. So just remind me then, what's Weidman? Because Weidman signed, is it a two-year contract
three
with
year.
One year?
Three-year.
Weidman's out of contract. 2024, we've got eight players that are out of contract in 2024. Do you want me to list them?
Yeah, go on, mate.
No, disappointing already, and you're making me feel bad.
Joe Williams, Sam Pearson, Duncan Idahan, Andy Weidman, Matty James, Zach Viner. I'm taking it as exact. Well, he hasn't signed a new contract, and that will be his one-year option taken up at the end of this season.
By us, by the club, yeah.
Yeah, Rob Atkinson is out, but he's got a one-year option, so you could call him 2025. Cam Pring is out, but he's got a one-year option, so you could call him 2025. So it's effectively those six that will be out of contract.
So Williams and Weidman for me, Ian. Some decisions over those two, isn't it?
Yeah, there is. I mean, they're not, particularly Andy, they're not getting any younger. And
Can they take us any further? Are they going to? I mean, when
well,
you
that's it.
Are they going to? Is if you give them a new contract, you've got to say, is this player going to take the club any further?
What you've got to know is how you're going to play. For example, we've signed Kane Wilson, who was player of the season in League Two. I made a point that some people don't like about players from League Two coming in physically, and it takes them a year. Or a season, call it what you will, to physically get up to speed. Now, that's George Tanner, double hamstring. The same applies to players who haven't played a lot of football. Andy King, double hamstring. Kane Wilson, serious knee injury. Now, this is what I'm saying. I start to wince a little bit when we say, well, we're going to go for people. And with what has changed slightly, and it's quite a subtle change, is Pearson still talking about the targets being blokes that haven't had a chance in the Championship, that have done well in League One and Two, that have played 200 games? And that's a big change, but it was said very quietly. So a guy that's played 200 games is probably going to, at that level, is probably going to be a bit older. Not
25,
talking about
26.
Yeah, I'm guessing. So it may be they think, oh, perhaps the young ones, you know, we need somebody with first team experience who's used to that. And that was something that was more or less made as a throwaway comment. Not a lot of people have picked up on it, but I did. And I thought, well, yeah, that's a subtle change. You're still saying, I'm going to get blokes from League Two and League One. But what you're not saying is, we're going to get younger lads like Wilson and Tanner.
Yeah, no, it's difficult. It's difficult. It's just, summer's so.
Do you think, though, Ian, on that point, though, when he says a couple of hundred games, if they're 25, 26 and they're still in League One, League Two, and they haven't been picked up by Championship or Premiership clubs, there's generally a reason why they haven't been picked up, by Championship and Premiership clubs. I always felt like when he did say that, and, you know, all right, a couple of hundred, right, 25, 26, he's still playing in League One. You know, these Cameron, is it Brannigans at Oxford?
Yeah.
And players like that. And you're like, well, okay, all right. Is he going to make the leap? You know, we bought in Wilson, we bought in Atkinson. They're 22.
Yeah, they're League One. If you look at those lads, they're League One players, like Mark Sykes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think there seems that there didn't used to be very much difference between the lower divisions. Now I think there's a big difference and
big gap.
Difference.
Yeah, big gap.
Between the Championship in the Prem, I think you're looking at 50-60% difference. And from League Two up to League Three is probably 20. And then from League Two up to the Championship is probably something like 40% difference.
Mm.
And that's an awful lot.
Time, Dave.
Yeah.
So I'd wrap. Mometi, good case in point for what Ian's just saying. That showed that reel that he had in League One. Fantastic, you know, brilliant. The step from League One to Championship is vast, isn't it? And I'm sure Mometi there thought, oh, I'll come up into the champ. Oh, I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll do this, I'll do that. And he's like, ah.
Yeah, but I'd like to see him get given more of the ball as well.
Yeah, it'll come though. Pre-season, it'll come.
All right, just to wrap up, I'll come to each of you on this. We've got a week off, and then there's 8 games to go. I'll read them out. Everybody knows. I'm going to call them out. Reading at home, Stoke away, good Friday. Borough at home on Easter Monday. 2 tough away games, Watford, Sheffield United. Rotherham at home. Burnley at home, and then finish the season away at QPR. If ever there's a side that looks like they could be falling through the trapdoor into the relegation places, it's them, right? I've looked at those 8 games, and I'm predicting 8 points. And I'm saying it's a win at home to Reading. We get a point against Borough, which is a bit of an ask. Beat Rotherham and get a point at QPR on the last day. So I'm saying we're going to lose at Stoke, Watford, Sheffield United, and at home to Burnley. That puts us on 56 points, which is 1 point better than last season.
At least 2% better than last year, then.
Yeah.
1.5.
17th. We finished 17th on 55 last season. Trying to get now into the top half of the table, where there's a clear 5-point gap now. A couple of weeks ago, we were saying, well, playoffs are gone, but let's finish in the top half. You first, Mark, that little summation that I've given of the last 8 games, could you see it? It's all speculation, I know. But could you see it being better than that based on how we've played over the last 5? Am I being optimistic or am I being pessimistic? What do you think? Mark's gone.
Poor Mark.
He's probably been dragged out the house to go
probably,
to
his, he's yeah. probably... All right, I'll ask you the same.
Mrs. Tovey's dragged him out. For
yeah, he has got a family meal to go to. Yeah, are you still there, Mark?
Do you want me to do it, Dave?
You do just it. He's gone. Yeah, he's gone. He says he's still here, but he's not there. Go on. Those last 8 games, what do you think?
I think we'll finish up with 57 points and I think we'll pick up 9.
All right.
I'm going in this order. I'm going 3-1-0-1-0-3-0-1. So
all right. Well, if you're a binary, you'd know what that means. So can you put the matches? So you're saying beat Reading, yeah?
Beat Reading, draw with Stoke, lose to Borough, point at Watford, lose to Sheffield United, beat Rotherham, lose to Burnley, point against QPR.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, so one better than me. What do you think, Neil?
I'd like to think we can beat Reading. They're probably well knocked off that they're not playing us, and it's 2-week gap and might get some players because they're in awful form, even worse upon worse, aren't they? But so I'd like to think we'd beat Reading. Stoke away, horrible. Borough at home, Matt Crooks will score. Watford away. God, they won't be 0-0. They were awful against us, didn't they? They didn't play anything. So I think Wilder by that stage, if they're out, he's got some decisions. I think a point at Watford, lose at Sheffield United. I think we'll beat Rotherham, lose to Burnley, and Chris Martin will score against us at QPR
and keep them up on the last day of the
season. And keep them up on the last day of the season. Which is two fingers to Pearson or something as he's running past.
Yeah. Do you see that look of disdain on Martin's face and all the other players when Ainsworth had in that? There's a little clip on Twitter. Have you seen that, Ian? That little clip on Twitter of Ainsworth trying to there's a touch of the Lee Johnsons there. Did you see that?
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it. Have a look at that.
I love the concept of you lose 6-1. The team talk's got to be, right, let's keep it tight. It's gone now. You've all trained well during the week and all the rest of it. And then go out and they can see the goal after 3 minutes, don't they?
Here we go. Now, a slightly stronger version of that. But at the time... it's been great to have all of you joining us, listening live Sunday afternoon. Decent number there. We got a week off... next week, which is good. We'll be back. We'll be back after. We'll be reporting on a Reading game.
We got two weeks off, haven't we?
No. 2 weeks. 2 weeks off. Yeah, we haven't got a game next week, so it's 2 weeks off.
It's 2 weeks, yeah. But we got a weekend. There's no game next weekend. And then we got April Fool's Day. Will it be all Fool's Day against Reading as the season enters its final leg? So we're going to finish up about. Yeah, if we stay where we are, and it is, you always said, Ian, right from the word go, you know, the end of the season was always going to be tough. And if you look at those fixtures in there, Borough, Watford, Sheffield United and Burnley and QPR on the last day are going to be scrapping for their lives if their bad form continues. Tough end of the season. And if we get that 56 points that I've said or 57, 58, we'll have done moderately well, and then that'll be it. Season 22-23 will be over. Well, we're over for this episode, so I'll say thanks for listening. Those of you that listen live, thanks for listening. Those of you that are listening during the week, thanks to Mark, who's gone off for his mothering Sunday meal. Thanks to Neil, who's been sat with me. And thanks to you, Ian. Have a good international break, guys. All the best. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Cheers. Bye-bye. What if I've been unlucky? Really, I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy as a king. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song.
Now wake up, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When red robins are bubbing along. Red robin come bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin starts bobbing along.